And good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Beth Pike, and on today's edition, our host, Melvin Merritt, is going to be talking with Rod Chappell. And Rod defended Medicare 23, and that would be that he was explaining the legal wranglings and political motivations behind their prosecution, and what happens now that they have been convicted of trespassing. In the second half of our show, our host Jeff Humfeld will be talking with, he'll be talking with Edna Hardin and Keith Brown Ill about the Missouri Cure Conference coming up later this month, and they'll tell us about the speakers and workshops that we have going on. And then stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast. And at the close of the show, we'll have our 420 Drug War News. Up next is Melvin and his guest, Rod Chappell.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 FM on your dial. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. On the phone with me as my guest is attorney Rod Chappell.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
We will be talking about the 22 religious leaders who were spared from jail but still could face fines after being convicted of trespassing during protests in the Missouri Senate in support of expanded Medicaid coverage for low-income adults. The religious leaders, many of whom are black, are among hundreds of clergies and other activists who filled the Senate gallery in May of 2014, singing hymns, chanting for lawmakers to expand Medicaid eligibility for as envisioned by the Democratic President Barack Obama's health care law. And we're going to be kind of talking about this because it was a complete Republican lawmakers who refused to accept federal dollars to expand Medicaid. So, I have the attorney on the phone, and I think he's the one that's litigating this, and you can clarify this for me if you don't mind me calling you Rod.
Yes, sir. Please do. Okay. Please do. And it's a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for taking up this important issue.
Yeah. And I understand that they are called, the at least they've been coined as the Medicaid 23. And give us a little background of what's happening with this case as it stands.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, you know, May the 6th, 2014, the 22 defendants in this case, there's one other that will have to stand trial by himself. We'll have a hope to set a date for him later this month. In addition to about 270 other people, at least, filled the state capitol on that day. They were in the rotunda, and then they went up to the Senate gallery because their pleas for ensuring that humanity had a way to go forward, that people would not die at approximately the rate of 300 or 350 people a year from a lack of health care. So they had tried to call and tried to communicate and tried to get their message across. Some of them had completely been ignored. People refused to speak with them in their own districts, in the Senate offices, and so they had no other recourse than to talk to the folks out on the floor in the way that they did. And so this group of 300 went into the Senate gallery. They observed the Senate process. It was in a filibuster at that time. Senator Nasheed, a Democratic senator from St. Louis, was filibustering attempts to prevent Medicare expansion, and they began to pray. And they sang gospel songs, and they chanted Bible verses. They had made arrangements earlier so that if anything happened, they would not be arrested. They wanted to find out exactly what they could do. Talk to the police. What they were told is they would be tapped on the shoulder, and then that's when they would leave.
So
that's,
in other words,
the
they went
supposed to go.
They went through the first proper channels in terms of speaking with their representatives, and still with no avail. And from my understanding, especially when I hear something like this, and even when the monies were allotted to them for the expansion of the Medicaid, yet they rejected it because of the fact that it was Barack Obama's initiative, so to speak. And it's just appalling that, you know, this is my opinion. This is not the opinions of this radio station nor its affiliate. But the point that, you know, I think that anything that Barack Obama had threw out on the table, they rejecting it. And I, you know, and just personally, I feel that, you know, even if their mother was included in this, and I know this is a big jump, but I believe that even if their mother was included in this, they would reject it just because Obama is the one that's initially put it out. What are your thoughts?
Well, and I totally understand what you're saying. And, you know, it seems like there's been some unnatural avoidance of a facility, of a device used with our own money. Imagine we pay our taxes into the federal government. The federal government is going to give us some of that money back to let us live, right? And I don't want any confusion about this. This is not a urban issue or a rural issue. This is a humanitarian issue. So to the extent that senators and representatives, Republicans, Democrats, whoever they are, fail to utilize the resources to support their own constituents and ensure that the people that vote for them live, I just don't understand it. And so it's got to be something else, and I think that your explanation is at least as plausible as anything else, for sure.
You know, and you brought up a point that made me think about, you know, most and most of the senior citizens, they are the one that is very dedicated in voting every time that there's an election here, that they're not going to, you know, acknowledge that they are in need of this expansion of this Medicaid. And yet these are the people that will be, you know, very faithful at the polls every year. And it seems like it would behoove them to, you know, at least step up to the plate and get off of the one side of the aisle, so to speak, and go head on and do this for, you know, our senior citizens, especially those that are dedicated in voting.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you had to count on any demographic, it would be them who's going to be at the polls every time.
Every time.
You know?
Every time.
Yeah.
And it's just appalling to even think about, you know, that the only thing that they are making decisions on through the through politics. And I think that, you know, politics needs to be taken off the table and think about people, you know, because this is a human matter. And this is only a humane matter as I see it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you couldn't be more right. I think that that's the definition of good leadership versus being a politician.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed that you made a real statement in which I, you know, I admire from you. You said that this is a tough crime to try to hammer down with the traditional American value is ridiculous. And kind of explain what your thoughts were about something like this, when you were saying that this is too of a stiff sentence, you know,
yes,
finding
sir.
These guys.
Yes, sir. And that really comes in two parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see a lot of politicians, and that's just what I'll call them, because they get on TV and they want to talk about we're going to be tough on crime and we're going to have harsher sentences and we're going to send everybody to jail and we're going to build more prisons. They can't figure out a decent conversation about health care, don't have any kind of an idea about education, but that's all that they know, this tough on crime stance from the 80s. That's what we're seeing here in rural America. We're seeing it in other local municipalities throughout the state. And the problem is that they are hurting their constituents.
Mm-hmm.
They are trying to collect money and extort money out of people who have the least resources and the least ability to defend from it. Here we've got people who came here to the state capitol. If you can't go anyplace else in the state and be heard as a citizen, you can come to the state capitol. And and what they did is they prayed. So you got two things. You have citizens exercising their right as citizens to seek redress from their legislators, and you have people exercising their faith, right?
And
you have a local prosecutor, Mark Richardson, who has decided who can say what and when. We're not going to be tough on American values, not as long as the NAACP and I'm around.
And especially when you mentioned that, you know, prior to they went through all the channels, and so they was not, you know, they were left with no recourse but to go to the chambers and sit and sing and pray and those types of things and get some type of attention on this matter. And but yet they were treated as criminals.
That's right. That's right. Thousands of people come down every year. We heard from Senator Kiki Curls there in the Kansas City area. Mm-hmm. She was one of the witnesses in our trial that said that thousands of people come down every year and do that same sort of thing. Now, they may not sing gospel songs or chant Bible verses or do it as loudly or as in the numbers that they did it, but they come and they visit the Senate and they seek redress, and that they anticipate people doing that and they want people to do that. Mm-hmm. She was very clear that she, for specifically, and as far as we can tell, Kurt Schaefer, who was one of the leading Republicans at the time, none of them wanted any of these people prosecuted. Kurt Schaefer also testified, and now this is much to his credit. He said that even though he didn't agree with them on the Medicaid issue, he understood why they were there and believed that they had a right to be there.
Just for the sake of the listeners, you know, let's get into the meat of this Medicaid. Tell us a little bit about that, especially, you know, when we're talking about, you know, whether or not they're going to expand it. So what are the Republican Party lawmakers are trying to do? Are they trying to eliminate this Medicaid, or what is it?
Right, right. Well, so it seems like for decades we've been engaged in a war on poor people, one in which folks who have resources are trying to decide who lives and who dies, and that's literally what's going to happen here. Mm-hmm. Every year, about 300, 350 people will die from a lack of health insurance, and that could be solved by the expansion of Medicaid to use the federal funds that have been allotted. Now, our state legislator, Republicans, have primarily decided that they're not going to do that. Now, there's a couple of people who've gone the other way with them, who've thought that there's got to be some compromise for life, that we can be physically responsible while at the same time being morally straight. But the essence of it is that people are dying for lack of health care coverage, while other folks are looking at budgets. Right?
Right.
And looking at it in a way, not even to say if I give X number of dollars to provide for health care here, then I'm going to have to take that away from schools, or we're going to have to shut down this or not do that. This is money that was allocated from the federal government for this purpose, so that people wouldn't die, and they would rather not take the money and just let the people die and worry about the budget.
And you know, and I have to ditto on what you said in one of your statements about that. A lot of the lawmakers are out of touch with their community or their constituencies, and yeah. And I think that you know, it is a true statement, because I think that they're only looking at numbers and dollars and those types of things, but not looking at it from the human perspective.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. So, and if I can add to that just a little bit,
sure.
Another way that we're seeing that same thing. So imagine this. In one voice, they're going to say, you can't have any health care. And when they're running for office and when they're in office, they're saying that we're going to lock up everybody, give them long sentences, and not use mercy where justice is being substituted. And then finally, they want to take away your right to vote. Mm. On November the 8th, we're going to actually vote on a constitutional amendment, Amendment 6. Everybody needs to vote no, in my opinion, would allow for them to remove the right to vote for the Constitution. Because what kind of citizenship would that be, where they say you can't have any money that you paid for taxes to live to fund the health insurance that everybody knows is necessary for you to live, and that when we catch you, or if we catch you, or if we allege that you did something wrong, we're going to lock you up. And then on top of that, you won't have a voice in how your tax dollars are being spent.
Absolutely.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and I think that the way that I'm seeing it is almost like it's going back into a authoritarian-type system. And,
yes.
And I think that that's crazy, because especially when we're here in the land of free and we have fought for all of this freedom, and yet you're being jailed and prosecuted, you know, wrongfully, you know, for just standing up, you know, what is right. And I think one of the Indian leaders that made the mention that, you know, just because it's been set at the law, made a law, doesn't mean that it's right, because I think the system is setting up what's wrong and turning it into right. And so I don't know what your thoughts are about that, but this is what I feel. That this is what's happening with our society, with our laws, and those types of things. And as I mentioned, these are my opinions.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead.
No, and I totally understand and agree with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. Lots of our relatives, you know, our mothers and fathers, grandparents, they lived through Jim Crow,
mm-hmm.
right? They understood what it was to be treated separately, to be treated unequally, to mm-hmm. have to live under a separate set of rules. And that's what we're coming up to with a whole set of society. This time, it might not just be limited to black folks, mm-hmm. right? There are going to be a whole bunch of poor folk who are included in that, who won't have access to health care, won't have access to education, will not be able to find decent jobs, will be left out of the economy, their families will suffer, and they won't be able to vote in the process.
And I'm seeing this from, especially when you begin to start moving things away from people, and people begin to start reacting from, and this is might be a far stretch word, animal-like, literally, because when you start taking resources and you start taking various programs are completely away from people that are already poor, then they're going to react to that.
Right. That's exactly right. And I think that's happening on all sides. I think that there's a certain group of folks who feel like they're losing or that things mm-hmm. are being taken away from them. Mm-hmm. And then there are other folks who feel like they need, like we have to have. And so when I think about the clergy that came down and the parishioners and the laity mm-hmm. on May the 6th, and they're coming back. They're actually going to be here today in Jefferson City with a great Reverend Barber from North Carolina who's been leading the Moral Mondays movement down there. These are people who are seeking to sustain life. So on one hand, you've got folks who are grabbing and trying to take from others so that they can try to regain or keep something that they perceive as being taken away, when in fact there's no demonstrated loss. And on the other hand, you have people who, out of love and tender mercy, would like to see humanity propped up. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very interesting dynamic that we're in right now.
Yeah, and it's so true, because it kind of reminded me when the quarterback made his statement mm-hmm. and took a knee, during the time of the anthem. And so, but that was his right. It didn't have anything to do with, the fact that he didn't love his country. But this is what right. we're in. We were in a free country, and we expressed these rights, and this is what we fought for. I was over in Vietnam, and yes. a lot of those different things that, we fought for. And I understand where he's coming from, and I understand where the clergies are coming from. And this is America, and we thank God for America. And, no one else can do the things that we're able to do but in the land of the free. And I'm all for it, especially, standing up for what you believe in.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, and when I look at the courage of those preachers and the laity that were there with them that day, mm-hmm. not only to stand up in the way that they did in front of the Missouri Senate, mm-hmm. but also in the way that they did at trial. I remember, I've been with a number of criminal defendants awaiting some kind of a determination as to what their fate was going to be. That's in and out of trial. And I can tell you, most of those folks spend a lot of time praying for themselves. Mm-hmm. I witnessed these people, the defendants in this case with the Medicaid 22, even as they were trying to figure out, the jury was trying to figure out whether or not they were going to be jailed. They prayed not for themselves, but for all the people who had lost their lives in the 2 years that it took this case to get to trial.
Mm. So, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so, just to go back into this this whole emphasis is that Medicaid, and so, give me because I'm trying to wrap my mind around what these lawmakers are trying to do in terms of this Medicaid. Are they trying to lead it exactly where it's at, or are they just trying to eliminate it completely?
Well, and I think that that's the real question, right? Because mm-hmm. once you recognize that there is a serious deprivation, that your citizenry is going to perish, literally perish, they're going to die mm-hmm. without the want of medical aid, then you've got a decision to make, right? I don't know how you can say with a straight face that we are not going to fund health insurance so that people can live, mm. right? To do that says literally that poor people, people without means, are going to die. And it's for some reason, just by them being poor, we're going to let them die.
And so that's
when
really
I talk about this war on poor mm-hmm. and on the poor through these poverty conversations that they're having. I don't think that they're doing it for the benefit of the individuals who are suffering. It's hard to imagine that they're doing it for the benefit of us. We would be hard pressed to say that we were just going to segregate one county or five counties or 10 counties out of Missouri, that we're just going to let those guys go, send them away, banish them, reduce services, take away services, so that the rest of us could have better lives. But that's the kind of analysis that these lawmakers are engaging in.
Mm. And you know, I heard somewhere that, you know, you can quote me on this, is that, you know, I understand that some of the Republicans really want Social Security to be taken away. And I don't know whether or not they were using this money, because I understand that the Social Security was funding a lot of the wars that we have been participating in. And I don't know if you have any information or background behind that, but I read that somewhere where this one Republican individual is literally advocating to take away Social Security from completely off the map.
I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. You know, and I saw a deal online the other day, and it was talking about how America is not a socialist country, and we're capitalist, and we're a democracy. Mm-hmm. And people get confused the difference between an economic system, right, and a political system. Democracy is not an economic system. That is a political structure, and it can operate within any economic system. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so to say that we can't have these safety net programs that ensure that people don't die, the other day I listened to a wonderful lady. She happened to be a person of faith, and she was telling me about how one of her relatives, a young child, mm-hmm. had perished, had died, as a result of not being able to have some preventative health care. Now, the test was $162, and it wasn't presented as one where either you get this or you'll die. They said that you should get this and determine whether or not you have certain factors that might make you have to need some medication or some other care. Mm. Well, they didn't have the money, so they didn't get the test, and the child died. I don't understand how we have gone from a society that would tell you that we honor our veterans, that we honor our children, that we love our seniors, but we won't pay the price to ensure life prevails. Mm. That's not within my moral teaching, and that's not within my political structure. People who don't vote in the same way that will ensure life can proceed, I don't know if they've got a place being in office. And
yeah,
I think that on November the 8th, we've got to take a real opportunity not only to exercise our constitutional right to vote, but to ensure that we elect people who are in line with our moral and political values, that everybody's got a right to justice and equality, that we're not going to stop people from being able to protest at the state house, being able to pray where they want to pray, you know, that we're not going to continue to allow education to be underfunded. Missouri has a lousy educational system, one that needs to deeply be improved, but there will be no improvement until more money is devoted to the process. But at the same time, we want to spend three times the money we spend on education housing prisoners, you know? And in the face of that, politicians, the best thing they can come up with is, I'm tough on crime. I am sick of prosecutors talking about I'm tough on crime. You better get smart on crime, right? We've got crimes that people commit, and if they're serious crimes, then we need to do something with those people. But to say, period, that we're going to extend all the sentences and make sure that everybody does every day of time that they get, and make sure that we ask for all the time that there ever could be, and to put mandatory minimums to take away the discretion from smart judges, I think is wrong-headed and un-American.
Mm.
Now, and I'll just balance this with one other factor. Anybody that is not voting in line to allow all Missourians to continue to vote, that is, voting against Amendment 6, needs to think about whether they really are a Missourian. Are they an American? We're Americans, and we believe that every person has a right to vote. The United States Supreme Court just recently upheld that out of a Texas case that was similar to from a situation that we have here in Missouri.
We have to cut it off.
Every person's got a right to vote.
Rod, we have to cut it off.
Anybody not voting on that line, I think, has to get out of the way.
We have to cut it off right there. Remember, you've been listening to this on Jaws of Justice right here on KKF, not, KKFI 90.1. I have been your host, Melvin Merritt, and I pray that you would have a great and a blessed day.
Now, the calendar for September 12th. The KC chapter of Mothers in Charge Healing Support Group will be meeting Thursday, September 15th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, Suite 124 West. They are at 3200 Wayne Avenue, KCMO. This group is for people who have lost loved ones to murder and violence. The first hour will be sharing of experiences, and in the second hour, therapists and others who can help navigate the emotional and legal terrain will be available. For more information, you can find them on the web at www.kcmothersincharge.org or call them at 816-912-2601. Are you looking to be a mentor? High Aspirations has a mentoring program designed to help African American males 8 to 18, and they need men to volunteer so they can reach more young men. Mentor training and support are provided with as little as 2 hours a week commitment. For more information, call 816-305-3334 or email admin, that's capital ADMIN, at highaspirationskc.org. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. You are listening to 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. Tune in next week when we talk with Deona Cooper of Social Worker Helper about the barriers that have been raised to voting in America. Welcome back to Jaws of Justice Radio, and today we are going to find out about Missouri Cure, that is, Citizens United for the Reform of Errants, and their statewide conference on September 24th here in Kansas City. Last week, we talked about, we played an interview Keith Brown L. did with Max Parthas of New Abolitionist Radio about the duly convicted exception clause to slavery in the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. If you did not get to hear it, you can check it out on our podcast on the KKFI website, or better yet, you can attend the conference and hear Max give the keynote address. My name is Jeff Humfeld, and as a matter of disclosure, I am a member of Missouri Cure. My guests today are Edna Hardin, President, and Keith Brown L., Vice President of Missouri Cure. Keith is also a longtime host of Jaws of Justice Radio. We welcome both of you.
Good morning. Thank you.
Hedy? Yes.
How are you this morning?
I'm fine, but you know I go by Hedy.
Yes.
Not Edna.
I understand that.
Cure stands for Citizens United for Rehabilitation of Errants.
Oh, for, okay.
Just a quick correction.
And we're chairman, not presidents, chairman and vice chairman.
Oh,
right. We don't make any money.
Yeah. All right. Well, the cure, the full title is quite a mouthful. So, Edna, can you explain just really what the Hedy, can you explain what that means?
Well, Citizens United for Rehabilitation of Errants started in Texas in 1972. Former priest Charlie Sullivan and a former nun, who is now his wife, Pauline Sullivan, started CURE in Texas. And it grew into a large organization there. They had their first annual conference in 75, And then in 85, they decided to take it national, and they went to Washington, D.C., and started establishing CURE chapters in different states. And Missouri CURE started in 1990, and I was the chair. I got it started, and so we've been going for 26 years now. And what we try to do is give hope to, we fight for the rights of prisoners and their loved ones in Missouri prisons, and we publish a quarterly newsletter, and prisoners are the main members of CURE. We charge only $2 a year for a prisoner membership, or 5 stamps, and we also support their loved ones in the community. So this is our 13th annual statewide conference, and it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, it does sound really interesting. I've been looking at the information, well, working on it a little bit. So can you give me a little bit more about what the aims and goals of CURE are? In other words, you know, you've touched on human rights, you know, dignified
right.
treatment, training programs, you know, medical care. What all are you involved in?
Okay, number one, our mission is that prison should be only for those who must be incarcerated, and that prisoners should have all the resources needed to turn their lives around. In other words, prisons should exist only for the purposes of education and rehabilitation. And I think most of us know that that's not the case today. People go to prison as punishment, but once they're there, they're punished further. In many ways, the health care is terrible, the food is horrible. They're just, to me, you know, once you're removed from society and exiled and put in prison, that's the greatest punishment short of death itself. They're not there to be punished further. They should be there to be rehabilitated and restored to society. So what we try to do is give them the tools they need to fight for their own rights and give the knowledge that, you know, can be spread around to the prisoners and people on the outside to know what prison's really like.
All right. What kind of advocacy does CURE do? I mean, you're talking about all these things that you'd like to see happen in the prisons and you know, the help that the families need in particular. I think a lot of people don't realize that when someone goes to prison, they don't go alone. They take their family with them in a lot of ways. You know, most people don't.
Keith, would you like to speak to that?
Well, first, the first thing we try to make people understand is that the United States has 1/4 of the world's prison population incarcerated right here in the U.S., and this is quite a monster that we're trying to take on. So we have to try to do our best to generate as much awareness as we can and pull as many people as we can into this fight against this monster that we're trying to contain. We are coming up on an election where there is a strong possibility that the people who set this mass incarceration insanity into motion are going to be retaking office. I'm speaking of Hillary Clinton. And if we can't count on her to do it, we can probably most certainly count on Donald Trump. The problem is not getting any better. It's getting worse. A lot of people are in prison for crimes they didn't even commit. The system doesn't care anymore. They don't try to evaluate the evidence that they are locking people up for, and they try to target people that they can put on these juries who will just sit there and believe anything the prosecutor tells them. Then they'll send people off to prison for things that they should have never even been convicted for, and it's not supported by the evidence. So these are the things we try to make people aware of, and we try to make people understand that there are a lot of people out here walking around on the street who think that nothing like that could ever happen to them, and they find themselves in those same predicaments.
All right. As far as how you advocate for those guys that are, and those the folks that are behind bars and the families, are we talking lobbying at the state capitol? Are we talking letters? And calls to the prison. What kind of things do you actually do to?
We do it in every way we possibly can to bring attention to this problem, because
we do some lobbying. We're pushing now for a bill that would reduce the 85% mandatory minimum that is given to thousands of prisoners for so-called violent crimes, and also to restore good time to where people who go to prison and do their best and rehabilitate themselves can have a chance for parole. That's one thing we do. We get a lot of letters from prisoners. We try to advocate for them in whatever way we can, but we can't take on individual cases. We go to prisons. We go to their seminars, to their annual dinners. Just like Keith said, we advocate in every way that we possibly can.
All right. CURE, as an organization and its members, keep in touch with prisoners. You talked about that. In part to monitor the conditions within the institutions and also to inform them of their rights and what should be done. I want to ask you how you go about contacting and keeping in touch with prisoners. I know that phone calls, of course, and letters, but you also have a newsletter. Why don't you talk a little bit about the newsletter and what you put in the newsletter and what it's for?
Well, it's called Turning Point, and it's been going since 1991. And we have sometimes submissions from prisoners. We talk about topics that are of importance to prisoners. We talk about changes in laws. We talk about just spreading the news, like about this conference coming up. We give them pictures of some of the things that we've been involved in some of our meetings. Keith, help me out here.
Well, one of the things that we are trying to accomplish here at the conference that we're having in Kansas City, it'll be coming up in another 2 weeks, is that we're trying to make everybody understand that this is not just a problem that's affecting people who are incarcerated. And the tentacles of the monsters continuously stretching out to affect the lives of people on the street. You made the comment a while ago about when people go to prison, they don't just take that individual to prison, but they take the whole family. And there are a lot of things out here that are being done that could probably prevent people from going to prison, but they allow conditions that lead to crime to continuously exist. And we want to address those things as well at the conference.
Okie dokie. So the newsletter has been going for quite some time now.
Yes.
25 years.
Have you ever had any problems getting it into the institutions? I mean, I would think that, the way some of these institutions and some of the people who run these institutions are that they may not like everything that you print. What are your legal rights to send that newsletter into the prison, and what kind of trouble have you seen?
I have never seen so many people who insist that they are doing things right and that they are so politically correct, but they're at the same time they're terrified of any mention of the truth. They are more afraid of people that stand up and tell the truth than they are angry people with guns. And we have this problem all the time. It's not just Missouri CURE, it's anybody, and it's not just the people in the prisons, it's the people out here in society. They just don't want anybody to criticize them for the things that they do wrong. So, yes, we do have these type of problems. We've had to have legislators go down there and talk to the people at the prisons and try to intervene with, because if we print up a newsletter and we got 300 or 400 copies, and then we, for some reason, they find something that they object to in the article or one of the articles that we put in the paper, then that's, 300 or 400 copies that we're not going to, because the majority of people that read the newsletters are people in prison.
And we have about 800 copies that go into the prison each time.
Yes, it increases just about every time we put out a newsletter. And they love these newsletters. We don't advocate anything as far as trying to take over the prisons or anything illegal. We got accused one time of having some instructions in the newsletter about an exploding lunch. I've never heard of an exploding lunch. I don't even know what you would do to, and I don't know who was supposed to have written the article.
And yeah, that was totally ridiculous.
And so we contacted the director, and we told him that there was no such article in that letter, and we informed him that that was a violation of the Patriot Act by making bogus bomb threats. And then they politely wrote us and told us, well, we're sorry, we made a mistake about it wasn't your publication, it was somebody else's. But, you know, this...
It didn't make any sense at all, period.
It didn't make any sense at all, but it just shows you that the extremes that they'll go to just to try to stop people from communicating the truth simply because you're saying something about them that they don't like. And I every time I communicate with them, I tell them, I'm like, it's, if you people didn't do the things that you were doing to these people in prison, then you wouldn't have any reason to worry about them being told how to address certain issues. You okay. know, if this is your concern, why don't you stop doing these things?
Okay, I want to remind everyone that you are listening to Jaws of Justice Radio on KKFI 90.1 FM. And my name is Jeff Humfeld, and my guests today are Hetty Hardin, Chair, and Keith Brown L., Vice Chair of Missouri Cure. And I want to let's talk about the conference now, when and where it will be held, and we'll get into a little bit more about what's going to be at the conference. But why don't you let people know when and where it is and also how they register?
Well, the conference will be held at the Southeast Community Center. It's at 40, oh, I think I got the right address. It's 4021 East 63rd Traffic Way. The easiest way to get to it is to remember it's on 63rd and Jackson. And it'll be held on September the 24th. It'll be between the hours on a Saturday. It'll be between the hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And
admission is free, but you must register.
We're asking people to make reservations for the conference, not to have admission to the conference, but we are trying to keep a more accurate account of how much money we have to spend for food and other things of that nature. But everybody who wants to attend the conference will be free to, will be at liberty to come in and attend, because even if we run out of food, we still want people to come in and be able to hear the message, you know. And we promise you that this will be a conference that will be substantially different from the conferences that we've held. We think all the conferences we held have been pretty informative, and they've been pretty good. We try to make every conference we have better each year. And this one here, it goes right to the top. We have a very, very educated and prolific speaker, which is Max Parthas. He's very well educated in about the matters concerning the 13th Amendment, which authorizes the enslavement of people who have been convicted of crimes. And he's with the New Abolitionist Radio Movement. We have Brandon Ellington. He'll be a speaker, State Representative Brandon Ellington, who is a very staunch advocate for the rights of people. He's not like any other politician we have here in Missouri currently. And we need to bring awareness to the fact that we need more politicians like Brandon.
And he's our co-sponsor for the conference.
Yeah, he's our co-sponsor as well. We'll have Ms. Hardin. She'll be speaking, and I'll be speaking myself. And we are encouraging all the organizations here in Kansas City that's trying to bring a solution to the crime problems we have here. The reentry problems is for, you know, with people being able to get out of prison. Anybody that has any interest whatsoever in the criminal justice system, we are encouraging them to come out and attend the conference as well. Because we need...
Did I say something about that before you go on?
Yes.
Any organization that wants to address the conference for a couple of minutes, let us know. We're going to put some time on the agenda for that, but we need to know ahead of time how many organizations would like to address the conference. So we'll give you 2 or 3 minutes if you want to do that.
And we also need their participation in the workshops that we're going to be holding, which where everybody can more or less have a free discussion, because we think everybody's probably got some parts of the solution to the problem. You know, we don't profess to have all the answers, and I don't think any one organization can. And what we all really need to do, the one thing we're trying to emphasize, is that we need to stop. We got so many little organizations here in the city that's broke up little small handfuls of people. We need to, when we have problems like this where we have to take on some opposition that's this strong and has this much power and influence throughout the state, we need as many people as we can to be a part of the solution to this problem, because the people who are running these prisons now, who are making these laws, they have lost their way. They don't have a clue as to how to go about trying to fix a lot of these problems. The solution has to come from people like us out here on the streets who live this type of life every day. Either we're living it because we've been in prison, we're living it because we have family members in prison, and we need to find a way to make these people understand that you need some better solutions to these problems.
Okay.
I'd like to mention the workshops. We're going to have 6 workshops, 3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon, so you can choose 2 workshops. There will be one on reentry. We're going to have someone from Journey to New Life and Ricky Peters of Connections to Success. We're going to have one on prisoner health. Angelica Mueller-Rowry, who's the head of our prison health committee, and Renice Drake. Wrongful convictions will be led by Yohanan Elia and Shelby Day. We're going to have 3 in the afternoon. One on juvenile justice, led by an attorney, Mae Quinn, and Evelyn Crosby. One on advocacy, which will be led by Kay Perry, who's the head of Michigan Cure, and she also has been the head of National Cure for several years. And she'll also give us greetings from National and Michigan Cure. And we have one on legislation, led by Brian Colby. We're going to have awards, 3 major awards and some certificate awards. We're going to have some cultural additions. We have dancers from Dee Barker's group that will be, as people come in, we're going to have poetry by Max Partha's wife, Tribal Rain, who's a professional. We're going to have our MC is Bev Livingston of Mothers of Incarcerated Sons and Daughters. It's a great lineup, and you don't want to miss it.
You know, one of the things I'd like to ask, and this is something I've seen so often in conferences and other gatherings like this, is, you know, they all get together and they do what they, you know, present all these different things, but there's no action steps or nothing, you know, no goals.
No follow-ups.
No follow-up, so to say, after this. And wondered what kind of follow-up you guys would like to see come out of this conference.
Well, first of all, we'd like to see more participation from people who attend the conference. You know, we'd like to see more people get involved with CURE. And we always emphasize that, you know, obviously, we want people to become members of CURE more, probably more so than any other organization. But what we encourage them to do, that if you feel like it's something in CURE that doesn't quite address the issues and the problems that you have to deal with in life, find some organization. We feel like everybody needs to be involved in something, because everybody's life is being impacted by a lot of the things that we're confronted with in society. And My personal belief is that I don't care what organization you're a part of, sooner or later you're going to be driven into the circle where everybody is trying to find a solution to a problem, because this is how desperate the situation has really gotten. And we would like to see more participation in organizations. We can't do anything.
And we'd like to form a coalition.
Exactly.
Of organizations that are doing this similar type work, because in unity there's a lot of power.
Yeah, and if we don't have a large number of people behind us, then when we try to go to these places like the Capitol and different places like that, they just blow us off. You know, we don't have to worry about them. They're just a, you know, handful of people. If we go down there every time we go down there, we got 200 or 300 people or better, then that generates more attention than just a handful of people. And it's, and there are places we need to go to bring attention to problems
that don't necessarily mean going to the Capitol. It might be here in the city. It might be here in St. Louis. It might be here in one of the rural areas. We need people to become involved in the things that we are trying to do, and then we can sit down and we can map out some strategies about what action needs to be taken. But it's going to be up
to this is an example. Recently, there was Prisoners' Rights Day nationally, and some people in St. Louis, they have a group called Decarcerate St. Louis that have been working on the problems in the city jail and the workhouse. They went to the workhouse for a solidarity demonstration outside the workhouse, and people in the workhouse were yelling out, "We need showers." You know, just that kind of communication. That's just one small example of what people can do.
All right. I want to make sure that we get the information out there again on how people can find out more about Missouri Cure and register for the conference and where the conference is again and all of that. So, Keith, you want to handle some of that?
We have distributed flyers all throughout the city, and we have other methods of communication. And what you need to do to register for the conference is call 816-377-2873. 816-377-2873. If you've seen one of our flyers, we also have a St. Louis number on there. All you have to do is leave a voicemail or a text using the code R13, and we will contact you and make out the reservation for you. We also have people
now in St. Louis. If someone's listening from St. Louis, you can email me at Hedy Harden, HEDYHARDEN, 995@gmail.com. That's Hedy Harden, HEDYHARDEN, 995@gmail.com.
Get a phone number too.
Phone number is 314-730-2873. And 2873 spells out CURE, which is the same as Keith's number that he gave. So it's 314-730-CURE.
Okay, I want to remind everybody that the conference is on Saturday, September 24th, from 10 to 4 p.m. It will be at 4021 East 63rd Street Traffic Way at the Southeast Community Center. That is in KCMO. I want to thank both of my guests here today for coming in and telling us about the conference, and hopefully, you know, you can make it out there if you're so inclined. Once again, coming up next is the 420 Drug War News. We want to thank both of our guests, Hedy and Keith.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And just one last thing. If you'd like to come, the admission is free, lunch is free, but you need to register.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Appearing on The Daily Show, this is U.S. Senator Cory Booker.
What's going on in America right now is so contrary to who we say we are, the land of the free. We are a nation with 5% of the globe's population, but one in every four incarcerated people, persons on the planet Earth, are in our nation. And disproportionately for drug crimes, remember, we have more people incarcerated for drugs in America now than just about all the people incarcerated in 1975. This drug war has been a brutal explosion of our 500% increase in our prison population. And the people we're incarcerating, at college, at Stanford, people were breaking drug laws all the time. Whites and blacks break drug laws equally, but blacks are about 3.7 times more likely to be arrested for it. The people in our jail for these crimes are poor folks, mentally ill folks, drug-addicted folks, and disproportionately brown folks. When you have people being arrested today for doing things that the last two presidents admitted to doing, and very serious, read President Obama's books. Yeah. It wasn't just marijuana. This was felony crimes he admitted to. George Bush, whole lot of felony crimes going on there. And yet, when I was growing, you know, my parents had to fight a court case to be the first black family in an integrated town. I watched my peers break drug laws, but nobody was stopping and frisking folks coming home. Nobody was raiding their homes. It's a very different justice system that you experience in America if you're poor, and often cases if you're a minority. And that belies the truth of what, when I walk down the steps of the Capitol and I look at the Supreme Court building, written on the side of the wall is one thing, staring at all Americans passing by, equal justice under law. And until we reach that idea, we must fight. And what scares me about this is the most perverted type of privilege is that when there's a serious problem, but it doesn't affect you personally, then to you it's not really a serious problem. Yeah. This is a serious problem that should motivate all Americans to want to change it.
This is Chief Greenbud with It's 420 Somewhere.
Roll me something fat and long. Pack me a boat. Fill me a bomb. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. Roll me something fat and long. Pack me a boat. Fill me a bomb. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
What will it take to motivate? Please visit drugtruth.net.
Please? This is Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.